polygonal shooter with a clearly definable goal? Madness! It's Simulcra on Amigos, episode 369. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're going to be talking about Simulcra. You can pronounce it however you like.
There was some discussion before the show. I thought it was a Simulcra or Simulcra. But so it could be anything. I didn't see anybody that put out a definitive pronunciation. So I'm just going to go with what
it always say, but... be Karateka to That's... me.
Yeah, wrong. Wrong.
All right, Aaron, it's time to get down to business. And by that, I mean, what was the first time you ever saw in pure unadulterated glory the flat shaded polygonal polygon in a video game?
Oh, God, Bo, you're killing me. That. Let me think back for a minute. I mean, I'll tell you, I'll be straight up. The first, I'm sure this wasn't the first time I saw it. Okay. I can tell you that right now. Because there's stuff like on even like the Coco has but the thing I saw that really I thought to myself, holy smokes, you got something here, and I hate to put it over, but was, and this is well into it, but I remember seeing Star Fox. I was like, holy smokes, look at this thing. This looks like a real game that you could play that actually moves at a decent clip, you know, and it felt like you could do all the cool stuff with your ship. You could do the spins and stuff. I mean, yes, that's not the first one I saw, but honestly, I can't remember the first one I saw because I saw a sea of these things that didn't really have much of an effect on me. That's the first time I saw one of these, and I was like, man, now they got something with these suckers. What about you?
For me, it was when I went in Tilt at the mall. I think I was maybe in middle school. I think we went to the mall after ratings, and I saw Stun Runner. That was the first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
And to me, what made it cool wasn't the fact that you had these 3D models, but it was the way that they exploded. Because up until this point, whenever you saw something explode in a video game, what you essentially saw, well, for me at least, what I saw was a puff of smoke, or you know, some sort of explosion animation that was not related to the original thing.
It's like when you work on a computer, exact same thing, a puff of smoke.
Exactly, magic smoke, that's it. But when you blew something up in Stun Runner, you actually saw the parts of it fly off. That was incredible.
Yeah, yeah, and so that's a good choice. I hadn't even thought about those old Atari games, because Stun Runner came out, I think, well after Hard Drive, as I recall. I believe that Hard Drive predates it.
Hard drive was another one that I remember, but I'll tell you something, these
predate Star Fox by a good while, but the thing about these old, I never felt like, I'm not saying Stun Runner wasn't good, I loved Stun Runner and I loved Hard Drive, they're both good, but when I played it, I never thought the technology, I still thought there were limitations to it that weren't as good as what I was used to, you know what I mean?
And so,
when you moved past that, I thought, like I said, the one thing about Star Fox, I thought that's where gameplay met the actual graphic stylings to produce something. But I mean, I will say, yes, Stun Runner was a really good game. It's actually one of my favorites. That's a real good call, Boat.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Aaron, I'm about to make another really good call. Let's talk about this week's Amiga News. Amiga News. So, Aaron, we're going to kick things off this week with the melancholy happy trails to a man named Harvey Laser.
Yeah.
This is a name that was not familiar to me, but Mike Labatt over at Cloanto, the mind behind Amiga Forever, he brought this to the world's attention. Harv Laser was one of the big players in the early Amiga scene. He purchased an Amiga 1000 as soon as it was available. He founded the Amiga Zone dial-up service in 1985.
I love to know what that is. We got to look into that.
Mike calls it it was a CompuServe competitor. It was on the American People / Link platform. He wrote over 1,000 Amiga-related articles and reviews. He was interviewed and quoted on the Amiga in Time Magazine, Wired Magazine, the Wall Street Journal. You know, it's funny whenever you hear about these major, it's such a different scene because, of course, in the Spectrum community, we had the passing of Oliver Frey a couple weeks ago. Of course, he's best known for his illustrations on games. In the Amiga scene in the United States, of course, most people don't think about the Amiga being a games machine, being a, you know, it's non-factor in that zone. But in the productivity business zone, the Amiga was huge. And these are the names of the people that are remembered, you know, people like Harv Laser. So although he kind of flies under the radar of gamers like us, he was a huge, you know, pillar of the Amiga community in terms of productivity. He wrote the Amiga chapter in John Dvorak's Guide to Desktop Communications. Oh, when was the last time you thought about old John Dvorak?
I was a big fan of Dvorak, not because I necessarily believed in what he said, but like he was a crotchety old bum, and I kind of liked
him. Yeah, he was. Yeah. I don't know if he's still with us or not.
I think he's still alive. Yeah, he's too stubborn to pass, I think.
Yeah, and it says that he helped edit Rob Peck's The Amiga Companion, which is another, I'm sure, you know, productivity guide for the Amiga. It says that Harv passed away after a heart attack in his home in Torrance, California on Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. So this news is a couple months old, but I wanted to bring it to everybody's attention because he was such a big player in the Amiga scene. And like I said, melancholy, happy trails to Harv Laser.
Yeah, and also, yes, and condolences to all of Harv's family, and appreciative of what he did. And also, just to throw this out here, he's got a great name because that name, it's a mix up. Harv Laser. That sounds like somebody you could put like that's an action name waiting to go into an action game right there. So happy
trails, Harv. That's right. All right, Aaron. Now these next, we got a bunch of, you know, it's been a veritable cornucopia of Amiga related videos on YouTube this week. I'm going to let you handle these in the order that they are listed. The first one is all about turning an old Mac into a high end Amiga. Tell us about this one, Aaron.
You know, I'm a big fan of Dan Wood and his stuff. Of course, Dan and Ravi over at Retro Hour have been great friends of ours for a long time. Dan actually and Ravi both were on Amigathon a couple years ago, and I always look out for their stuff. And so Dan put out a thing here. You know, we're dummies. We don't know nothing when it comes to like OSs or any crap. But I had heard about this gimmick where you could take an old Mac with a PowerPC chip and stick a deal on there, and bam, you got it like a super high end Amiga, right? And this is Dan did it. I actually watched Dan's original video when he did this, installing Morph OS on one of these Macs. I guess they were. What would you? Those were Mac. Were those Macs? What were those old Apple products? They were PowerPC Macs.
Macintosh computers.
But
yes.
Dan did sort of an update on his old video. It's basically a sort of a guide to show you how to do the job on these things, where to get the stuff.
What's hilarious about this is that because of the hardware requirements, you are limited with what you can run this on. So, for example, if you've got a Mac Mini G4, which is the original cheap Macintosh, I was working at Apple when these things were released, and these things were under $500, and they were a bring-your-own-keyboard, monitor, and mouse solution. You can run Morph OS on these things with no problem, but if you get yourself a high-end G4 tower like the Plastic Fantastic I have, because of the separate hardware that's in there, you can't run it.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's weird. Well, I know where you get Morph OS, he says that there's a list of what you could get. Because it's funny, every time I get something that's Apple related, I'm like, hey, Boat, can we do this? We could never do it. You know, it's funny, though. I watched this because I thought it was interesting, but there were things in here I didn't understand, I didn't know, and I found, amusing. But one of the things is, I just thought Morph OS, you go download this sucker, install it, you're good to go. No, Morph OS is like $80, like 80 euros. It ain't free, brother. You got to pay. And I wondered, I don't know who owns it or where the money goes. I have no idea. Somebody owns
I think it's developed privately by some dude and his team.
Yeah.
And the money goes to said dude.
Dan even goes into like how it became, because the reason it came about was because there was people were making accelerators stuff for the Amiga that ran on those PowerPC chips, but there was no way to use them. And so that's how MorphOS actually started. I didn't know that. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this knew. Then he goes into some of the stuff you can run on this. It always, I always am amused when it comes to browsers and stuff. But you can actually run a browser in this that's that will run YouTube and do some other stuff. Something else I found interesting is he goes over like this desktop publishing software that's still under development for the MorphOS, and he mentions that they use it over at Amiga Addict to do the magazine with it, which I found interesting. And that's also not free. You got to pay that. That's still in development. So I guess that's why they're still getting cash for that. But I found this Dan has a pleasant demeanor, an excellent way of explaining this stuff. And I want to put this
nobody has the smooth radio voice like Dan would. Of course, that's because he is a smooth radio voice guy for his main job.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I will say. There's a reason the Retro Hour has had so many guests and has done so well over the years because, listen, you've got professionals that they're not a couple dipsticks. These are professional guys, Boat. They're not just some dudes in the basement. And so, lo and behold, they put out quality stuff. So I want to give Dan the high sign on that, Boat. Speaking of professionals, Boat, there's a professional we know called Doug. Doug over at the 10-Minute Amiga Retrocast, and Doug here has put out a new video upgrading the CDTV. This is pure madness. You got to give Doug credit. I mean, it reminds me of, like, you know those railroad carts that have the handle. You just go up and down the railroad track. Mm-hmm. It's like someone took one of those, put a jet engine on it, put like radar. That's what it's like. He does this CD32 up. I mean, he puts every conceivable thing that you can stuff into a CD32. It's got a USB floppy drive emulator on the back. It's got SD support. It's SCSI. It's got HDMI out. It's got this thing just stuffed full of crap. And Doug goes through it step by step. And shows you this his ultimate CDTV. I enjoyed this. It's good to see Doug back in the saddle. And if you're into the CDTV or want to be like I am, it's a nice little refresher on just what you would have to do to get what you want. Because if you ever thought to yourself, hey, if I got a CDTV, what could I do this? Could I do that? He does everything in this. And so you could just decide, okay, because you don't need to do all the stuff Doug does. You can do like a third of it. You'll be in business. But he's got this thing dolled up to the nines, doing all kinds of stuff. It's good stuff. Also, I want to mention that you remember we always ask what in God's name dynamic computing is. His shop or whatever. He actually goes into the origins of that in this episode.
Oh, so it actually exists. I thought it was something he made up and he just stuck with.
I don't want to steal his thunder here. You have to go there and find out for yourself, Bo. But I thought about you in particular when I saw it. Okay, here's another. Actually, I'm going to skip that. I'll come back to it. Here's a video that I found from the Retro Shack. And this is called the Amiga CD32. It promised so much and yet fizzled and died. Why? I like the Retro Shack guy stuff. He's got some good stuff in here, and he just goes in a little history on what happened with the CD32. It's nothing you probably haven't heard, but it's still interesting. It's well done. He lays stuff out nicely. He also goes in and works on one of these things, takes the board out, cleans it, you know, points out various differences between it and the Amiga 1200. Good stuff. He also fixes the machine while he's going over it. I enjoyed this as well. Again, if you know the story of the CD32, it's not like you're going to be blown away. By the way, Boat, he mentions that warehouse in the Philippines that I asked Mr. Pleasance about a while. Remember during our interview with him years ago? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't recall Mr. Pleasance like backing that story. I'm going to have to ask him again. But this is another this. The way
it is one of those old saws that gets repeated anytime people talk about the CD32.
The way that the Retro Shack got here talks about it, it's exactly what I had heard. I enjoyed this. This was a good video, especially if you're in the CD32. CD32 Boat, another Amiga that's on the rebound after a tumultuous start. Now it's got all the good stuff. Last thing I want to talk about here amongst these videos. And I just came out, so I only got to have a cup of coffee. And I flipped through it. It's our good buddy, Chris Edwards here. And this is him finishing up this Amiga 3000 tower boat, which, again, I'd rather have just a straight-up Amiga 3000. That's just me. But the tower's kind of neat, too, if that's your bag. He actually gets real funky with this. This isn't one of those deals where, like, you change the fuse and you're good to go. Chris has the diagnostic ROMs in this thing. He's got the O-scope hooked up. When you break out the O-scope, that's bad times. That means that it's mm-hmm. going down. He's got the schematics cracked out. So this is some straight-up old school figuring out what's going on. He's got his geek hat glasses on. This is spilled over multiple days. So he's getting in there and getting it done. But he gets it. He gets in there and gets it done. And he gets the thing fired up. It's a good video. If you like Chris Edwards, this is another great one that I think you will enjoy because he knows his stuff. And along those lines, Boat, I want to quickly touch on our upcoming event because Chris is going to be a part of it. And the upcoming event is, of course, International Computer Club, yes. which will be going down October 1st, Saturday, October 1st. That's a week from tomorrow as we record this. It's going to be going down at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to have Retro Rewind is going to sponsor this event, help us out, and Frank will be there to take part. I looked at the list of people that were signed up, Boat, to participate, and I mean, this could be, I don't want to jinx it, man, because the last one was pre-jinxed, but this could easily be the best one of these we've ever had. It's certainly the most people we've had interested, aside from Chris Edwards being involved. Just to name some of the folks that are signed up for this, Mr. Cole is in here, Mr. Chip, Graham W, Vebke's going to be back, Edmund, I'm glad to see Edmund's up and around, Petzl, David Z with one of his things, Pajaco, so I think that's everybody there. But we've also got out with Frank. I talked to Frank today, and he informed me, Boat, that we're going to have at least one special guest on the ICC this time around. And that is Mr. Pleasance himself. We talked about this earlier. Gosh. David Pleasance is going to be in the house. We'll probably lead the show with him because he's going to be, on a weird time.
He's got places to go.
But he, of course, you may have heard this. Mr. Pleasance has a couple books out, and he's releasing another book. Now, Mr. Pleasance speaks all over the place, Boat. In fact, you met him in Ireland. And mm-hmm. had a good time with him. And we've had him on the show before. But rarely do you get the opportunity to sit at your house and literally fire questions at this guy. Hopefully he'll answer stuff that's not book related. He'll just, if you have questions, you're talking one of the big wigs in Amiga. I mean, this is the guy. And this is an opportunity. If you've always wondered, hey, what about this? What about that? This is the time to ask him. So he's going to be appearing on ICC Live. So that should be a lot of fun to have him in there. One of the luminaries and certainly a guy that goes around and does a lot of these talks. We talked to him. How many years ago did we do those interviews, Boat? It's been a while.
Probably 6 years ago.
That
probably.
Was like, I remember when we had him on the show, we both decided like, we'll never get any bigger than this. This is the biggest thing we're ever going to do. And then was that before or after we had the Oliver twins on?
It was before. David was before. He was pretty early on.
It's wacky to think that we did interviews because we don't do that.
Well,
that
it was
much
back,
anymore.
It was back before we really had any content.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, those days are over. So anyway, to pound it home, it's October 1st, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be a great event, International Computer Club, and we hope you guys will come out and check it out. We may have another special announcement coming up soon about it, but yes, David Pleasance will be there to talk about his upcoming book and to answer some questions from the panel in the chat. If you are going to speak on the panel or just want to sit in, I think we're going to do it on Zoom this time around just for safety reasons and ease of use. And we will still, of course, be broadcasting the entire thing live on Twitch. It's going to be a happening. It should be a lot of fun, Boat. And we want to thank our buddy Frank over at Retro Rewind for sponsoring the event. Let's talk a little bit about Retro Rewind, Bo. Take it away.
Okay. Well, listen, there is a lot of stuff over at RetroRewind.ca. But since we're the Amigos, I figured this week we'd talk about the Amiga 600 accelerator that is setting the world on fire.
Absolutely.
The A630 is back in stock, and you can pick one of these things up for $225, and this is going to breathe new life into your classic Amiga 600. As we all know, the Amiga 600 was not all things to all people. It was not great for nobody when it was released.
Yes, it was nothing to nobody. You're right.
So this is a way for you to take the A600's form factor, which I personally really like. I love how small and how cute it is. It's sort of the wedge life that a lot of people that espouse the Mister really get into, where it's just this cute little wedge, and you stick one of these bad boys in it, and then bam, it's going to give you 64 megs of RAM. It's going to give you an O30 clocked at 50 megahertz. It's fully compatible with the PCMCIA slot, and it works with any compact flash or SD card solution you throw at it. Now, you can combine this thing with the compact flash adapter that Frank also sells, that's one of these integrated L-shaped solutions that makes you not have to run any wires, and you'll have yourself all you need to get going with WHD load, run whatever you want on there, and you will be ready for any gaming action. Of course, it's still not going to give you AGA, but guess what? Nobody needs that.
There's the barrier. That's crap. There's the barrier.
This is, like I said, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to upgrade your 600. There's the Terrible Fire, there's the Vampire, there's the Buffy, there's all kind of, if you want the best, cheapest solution out there, head on over to RetroRewind.ca, load up the search A630, put it in your cart, use the promo code Amigos10, save yourself 10% off its already low price, and get yourself a new lease on life for your A600.
And let's just throw this out there. It's Sep Tandy for a little bit longer, Boat. And so if you're a Tandite, is that a word? The Tandites?
Yeah, the Tandites.
They came in from the desert, the Tandites. If you're a Tandy guy, listen, Frank's got you covered. Diagnostics, he's got upgrade services for those chips on the Coco 3. He's got RAM expansions. And, of course, he's got the ever-popular Coco SDC. Get it while you can, brother, because they go fast. Yeah. And we definitely want to thank Frank for sponsoring our show and also for helping us out with the International Computer Club, Boat.
Aaron, let's talk about Simulacra.
Okay, let's just not say the name. Here we go. Nice little tune there in the Boat.
It is.
I kind of like that. So, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and since we've never ever talked about this ever, you never have played this one before, have you?
No.
No. Not me either. I never.
In fact, when I heard the name of this thing, I was immediately scared, because it sounds like some sort of like wizards and warriors, like a very text-heavy simulation of top-down, like sort of like a very complex Ultima is what I was thinking.
I was thinking some kind of simulation, like world building, like where you start a colony on a meteor or something. I don't know. It's none of those things, though. This is Simulacra, released in 1990, October of 1990, according to the ads. First released, well, actually originally produced on the Atari ST, so this one came straight over, and it looks like they released them simultaneously from the ads I saw, so it didn't look like there was any lag time. They must have developed both these with these two computers in mind. That's all they got released on from back in the day. Now, Simulacra, an unusual game, and it's coming out from the Micro Style publisher. You remember Micro Style, Boat, is sort of the same outfit that Micro Prose. It was like the Micro Prose, the other outfit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. And so this is sort of.
I believe that MicroProse, or that there was a split at some point, and MicroProse did like the simulations, and MicroStyle did everything else basically.
Yeah, I think that maybe they just did the lowest. But I don't know exactly the scoop on that. Developed by and this is appearing twice on the show in what 3 weeks. Developed by GraphGold, they're back again. But we just looked at Parajoid 90. A little bit ago, and this is another offering from GraphGold. GraphGold released some things we've actually tried on the show, and some things we really liked, including Fire and Ice, Iron Man Stewart's Off-Road, Rainbow Island, Parajoid 90, Viro Cops. They had some good stuff on here. And MicroStyle had an eclectic publishing arm here. This because they went from everything from a game like Simulcra to International Soccer Challenge, Oriental Games, Rainbow
Warrior.
Well,
if you'll notice, none of the games they were involved with are simulations.
I'd say this is probably,
and that's what MicroProse is known for.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. This came on a single disc. And actually, it's funny because a lot of the people we looked at, there's going to be a lot in common with Parajoid 90 on this because a lot of the same guys worked on it, including coding graphics from Andrew Braybook. We mentioned him. He was the head man last time. Mm-hmm. And just to touch a couple of things, he did Fire and Ice, Rainbow Islands. The same musician worked on this, Jason Page, who was responsible for the music in Parajoid 90, Putty Squad, Off-Road. So a lot of the same, pretty much a lot of the same guys. In fact, that's like almost all these guys worked on Parajoid 90. So we're familiar with them by now. I do want to single out Steve Turner. They've got him listed as the guy that did the sound effects in this, in the non-music. And I don't know why I do this, but just happened to click on his name to see what he was into. This guy had an incredible career. I mean, he did everything from sound design to publishing to designing to programming. He did everything all the way up into the consoles. And I wanted to mention him because I thought the sound in this was real unique for a game like this. It was very arcadey, like, and I mean like classic arcadey, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things when we get into this game. There's a lot of things that really reminded me of a classic arcade game.
Absolutely. So the gimmick in this, just to give you a little backstory, and then we'll talk about the game proper. According to the background documentation, the Simulcra unit was brought in to settle international disputes. This isn't the worst idea. There's a little Star Trek in here. So what does that mean? This was a simulated environment in a world with no real guns or bombs where nations would battle it out simulation style. And then they would set, and so instead of having a real battle, they would have this simulated battle. And that's theoretically one side would say, okay, you guys won. You get whatever we're fighting over, right? Even just saying it like that makes it sound dumb now that I think about it. But, I mean, it's a good idea. There was an old Star Trek original series where it was a very similar situation. They had the battle simulated, and then the computer would spit out the casualties for the battles, and then you would just parade your citizens into this vaporizer, and they'd all be killed. That's how it worked. So it was like this.
I think I'd rather fight in real war.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it sucks if you're just one of the guys, because you don't get to fight or anything. You just get killed. You know, so that's a kind of a classic episode. So anyway, you know how these things go, Boat, with you got these simulation gimmicks. You can guess what happened. The thing went out of control, system malfunctioned, and it began generating real weapons and tanks to attack the outside world. How does that happen?
It's the same old story.
But how does it have that ability? Who would put that in the system? Hey, just for fun, Bill, I'm going to hook this thing up to a replicator. I mean, what could go wrong? You're an idiot. What the hell they were thinking? So you've been charged, of course, as usual. There's no one else around. You're the only geek there is. You've got to put the kibosh on all this stuff in your ground-skimming SRV. And what you've got to do is go around and take out the power lines that keep the simulation machine functional. So you've got to shoot out the energy projectors that block your path and to clear each of the 30 matrices out. So, I mean, just 30 levels is what they're trying to say. What do you think of that, Boat? It's a backstory.
I probably could have come up with something better. I'm not going to lie to you.
I kind of like that, though. It's so goofy. It's not bad. It's not the worst.
I don't understand why you need to have the simulation part of it in there. Like, you know, like, why not just make this, like, in the far-flung future, you're driving around in your ship trying to knock out power lines on the enemy's deal, you know?
Well,
I guess it's because they're saying that this takes place within the simulation itself, and
no,
that's where
no,
all the polygons
come from.
No,
it's not, though. That's the thing that gets me.
I thought that, from what I gleaned from your reading there, I thought that wasn't the case.
No, it's
because
not.
It's not like Tron, where they're like, this all looks blocky because it's inside of a computer.
Yeah.
This is taking place in the real world.
See, they should have went that route. That makes a lot more sense. Go into the simulation and take out the power structures from inside, because then you could say that would explain why it looks like it does. But I don't know. Maybe we're spending too much time pondering it. So once you've digested the backstory, it's time to hop into the old SRV here and go to work on this thing. Now, this game pops up with basically, I mean, there's not really there's an intro picture and there's an intro tune, but there's no, this is one of those games that gives you a full motion intro. It doesn't give you any, I didn't see any backstory in the actual game itself. Did you see anything?
No, you just jump right into it.
I didn't see, I don't think there are even any options, are there? Were there options in this? Did I not see them? Because I didn't even see any.
I think that there are hidden options. I think that you can, well, according to the docs, I think maybe there is a level select in there somewhere. For some reason, I remember reading that, but maybe not. Maybe there's not.
I didn't see Jack Squat.
Yeah.
But this is one of those games where you fly around or run around this fighter shooting stuff. Now, it's not one of those games, on the other hand, because it's all done. And what would you, how did you call this? Shaded vector scrolling?
This is flat shaded polygons.
Flat shaded polygons over a 360 scrolling environment. You can, with freedom of movement until you hit the invisible walls, or they're visible walls in this case.
They're visible and they're deadly.
Do you want to try, because you're better at explaining things like this, do you want to try to explain the gameplay in this?
So, and take Star Fox, okay? Because this is a game that most people are familiar with, okay? Yeah. So, or Star Wing, I believe, as it was known in the UK, okay? And imagine instead of flying around in open space, you're sort of skimming along a surface of an area, of a maze-like area. And you are shooting targets in much the same way. The only difference is that you have full 360-degree movement. So you can move backwards, forwards. You're not constantly going forward. It's not a rail shooter like Star Fox. But the visuals are very, very similar in this game. Basically, the point of this game is to find the platform where you've got this shield generator and destroy it. And along the way, you're taking out pieces of the shield as you go. There are lots of polygonal enemies that shoot at you, and your job is to either shoot back or avoid them. And what makes this game unique is that your craft has wings that can fold in like a fly or something, like a beast that has wings that fold in.
Yeah.
What you're doing is you have to, this is the part of the game that is sort of weird. Like, Your craft is mostly indestructible until it's completely destroyed. But if you leave your wings extended, your wings can be shot, and then you're pretty much as good as dead, because in order to negotiate this maze, you have to skim yourself like a rock being thrown across a pond by taking flight and landing. And whenever you land on an area that is not a platform, you don't fall to your death. You just sort of skim across the top of it. You bump across the top of it until you come to rest. If your wings are shot out from under you, you are not able to fly. And so you basically just wait for grim death at that point. That's how I'd characterize this game. Would you say that's fair, Aaron?
I'd say well done. This sort of, you know what it reminded me of, Boat? It's if someone flattened out and extended a game of Zaxxon. That's what it reminded me of. Because, you know, in Zaxxon, you can skim or you can fly. And you go around shooting ground targets. There's also stuff that flies at you. You know, there was a game called Zaxxon 3D, but I don't remember much about it. But this sort of reminds me of of that kind of game, or maybe even a game like Stellar 7, where you we covered that a long time ago, where you fly, where you go on a planet and kill stuff. It's a real unusual game, and you, when you play a game like this, you mentioned, we've both mentioned Star Fox several times. You could see that a game like this, you could see exactly why the people that made Star Fox did it the way they did, right? And because they, I think that a game like this is would be better served to guide you across a set play field in a certain direction that doesn't give you 100% freedom. I think I'm not saying it's a bad thing in this game, but I can see the reasons you wouldn't do it. Because
here's the main reason you put a game on rails, because it's a million times easier to make a game that's on rails.
Well, I doubt Star Fox was super. Who was it that made that? Was that HAL Laboratories, something like that, to put that together?
Yeah, man. Wow, that's, how did I know, man, that? Yeah, how did you know that? But that's right.
So this game is a real interesting game, and I really have sort of mixed feelings about it, because like the thing mentioned, you've got 30 levels, and before the level, you sort of get a map of the entire level, and they're huge levels, right? And they get
each
bigger.
Time you die, it comes back too.
What's that? Yeah. And you can also, during the game, you can get stuff to get a map. That there, you also have, aside from what Boat mentions, you have the ability to just skim across. That you also have the ability to fly. I mean, you can fly up in the air if you want to, if you have the wings. The funny thing is, this is another game that suffers control wise well, for two things. One, this would probably be a lot better with analog controls, and two, you have to reach over and do lots and lots of stuff with the keyboard, and that I hated that, because the thing is, you're doing, it's not like you're doing the same thing over and over on the keyboard. They're used the function keys, F1 to 5, and it's stuff like turn your wings on and off, take off, look at the map. These are things you have to do a lot, and so that means you have to take your hand off the stick for a second, or look over at the keyboard to do stuff. Ultimately, I played these and where I remapped them to try to make it less annoying for me, and it did, by the way, make it less annoying for me to have the keys on the actual joystick. That was a problem. That was my biggest gripe with this game. The second thing I had a problem with was the fact that the line of sight is dreadful. It's funny, though, because you could sort of use it to help you in some ways. If you see a cannon off in the distance that's getting ready to shoot you, if you just back up for a second, it just disappears from existence. Then you don't have to worry about getting shot. But the draw distance in this is, I would call, pretty limited. Wouldn't you, Boat?
Well, if you go back and you play Star Fox, the draw distance isn't spectacular either.
Granted, but I mean, I wasn't comparing the two.
I think that they did. To be honest with you, it didn't bother me, because, like you said, you use it to your advantage.
But it makes it hard to navigate the maze, though, until where you're at. You really have to go back to that map.
Well, yeah, this game could have really used an on-screen radar.
Bam, you finished my thought right there.
I think there's, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the power-ups that you can get in this game.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So whenever you get, whenever you destroy an enemy or a structure, you get a gray ball, okay? And when you pick up the gray ball, it shows up the power-up is identified by a series of initials, they're displayed in a very vector-style way, which calls to mind, like, the original Asteroids is what I always think of when I see, or any vector game, really, Star Wars or whatever. And so you can get SU means speed up, RAD means radar. Yeah.
Always have the radar, always.
Right.
That was
Here's the thing. I wish that they, you get these things all the time, and it's not hard to get any particular power up. And so I almost wish that instead of either you make the power ups more difficult to get, or you start out with the power ups. It just seemed like I was picking up power ups left and right. It's weird, because I always complain about games being too hard. And I'm not going to say that this game is too hard, because I appreciate this game for not being difficult. But it just seemed like the power-ups were... So you were picking stuff up left and right, and I had a hard time remembering which power-ups I had. And again, like you said, when you have to reach over to the keyboard to do stuff, you're not going to want to, first of all, a lot of these things are sort of passive power-ups. For example, when you pick up the ECM, that's the electronic countermeasure, all that does is it screws up your enemy's missile guidance. So there's different power-ups that you can get that help you in various ways. But give me a CD32 controller. You know, the CD32, when it was released, they dredged up from the depths of the Amiga's back catalog so many turds. They should have taken this game and said, hey, remember this game? This game's actually good, and with a controller, it's going to make it great. Because you put your fly button on there, you put your map button on there, and then all of a sudden, bam, you've got a console-quality game that you can actually control without having to take your hands off the joystick to do what you want to do.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go with... Well, it depends on what console. I guess it could be console quality. I mean,
this would be a solid JAG title, man.
It does. You're killing me. You're not wrong. It's better than the Pac-Man, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
We complained about the lack of a map, and that's the thing. You have to pick up the power up to get it, and that's no good. This needs to have, because otherwise you have to consult the big map, and the big map sucks. The radar map ain't great, but it's better than nothing. Right. You're right. I would just pick up stuff willy nilly, you know, because and sometimes it would just pop up in front of you when you killed stuff with power ups. I was reading some help guides and I was reading some forums. And on the later levels, you basically are, the strategy is to not pick that stuff up because it just stays around. So you can, because by the time you start getting worn down, you can go pick it up again.
Oh, okay.
I didn't do great at this game. Part of the reason is, it's not the kind of hard game where you just instantly get murdered. But it's a game where you die through attrition as you wander. I mean, that was one thing that happened to me a lot. That would just kind of wander around. And also, I died a lot just when I was trying to navigate stuff with the keyboard. Anytime you've got a fly in this, it's a problem.
Well, when you fly in this game, you can't... Okay, this is the way that I played it.
Yeah.
I did, but I was never successful. When I first started playing, I was like, I can fly. Why am I driving? So yeah. I just fly everywhere. And then I died repeatedly all the time because I kept running into the walls because it's very hard to control yourself while you're flying.
You nailed it. That's why you
can't fly. This is what I always did. Whenever there was a gap I had to cross, I'd open the wings. I'd jump across the gap. Then I'd close the wings and continue to roll on.
But even that's a hassle. You're still hitting the keyboard. Oh, yeah. You know? Did you remap this, by the way?
No, because I wanted to experience it the way that it was originally.
Well, I know. I didn't do it till the end. But I wanted to experience it.
I'll tell you, one of the greatest visual delights in this game is when you knock out part of the force field.
Yeah.
You see the polygons, they sort of spin over and disappear, and you see it, the force field sort of like being dismantled before your eyes.
That's pretty cool.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah, it is nice. And if you listen to the guides, you can kind of go around and take out the perimeter force fields. Like there's a certain way to do this to make yourself have a better chance of success. Don't do what I do. Aimlessly shoot everything because you can easily get to. I mean, it's not like you're ever going to clear the map. And there's nothing there because stuff respawns. But I mean, you could absolutely clear everything, but like one or two things. And then you're kind of wandering around. If you don't have the map there, you're pretty much, you know, it's a lot harder. I would have made a better map that actually waypointed some. You know, I would have changed. I would have had it like it maybe point you toward the nearest shield generator, something. To make it a little less like I was just wandering around, because that was the biggest, and I wanted to get back to my Star Fox conversation about putting it on where you can't. There's no movement on rails because this game. My biggest problem with this was just being lost forever and just driving around, just getting killed slowly. It was irritating.
I do like the way that your damage is mapped. On this game, what you start out with is basically a compass rose, and whenever you take damage from all sides, you take damage from north, south, east, and west, and you see your hull wear down in various points. It's almost like a mech warrior type thing.
It is.
That's a little touch that they didn't have to do. They could have just given you a generic life bar. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and of course, we did. I don't think we mentioned that you've got two different types of shooting. When you do this, and it's of course, again, you're working under the under the poor fact that we've got one button to work with. So you can tap the button for just a shot, like a bullet. And if you hold the button, you get a missile. Mm-hmm. And I thought that worked. And don't get me wrong, I would sometimes shoot missiles accidentally, but I thought it worked okay.
Right, and I thought the targeting was cool too, because it's an auto-target game where you have enemies that are flying through the air, and you'll get a little reticule. Is that how you say it? Reticule?
I think you got that, Boat.
Sounds weird as I say it out of my mouth.
It sounds good, man.
So, anyway, you've got that, and it will just kind of center over the flying enemy, and that's when you let them have it with the missile. So I thought that the gunplay in this game, the act of shooting, was very well done. If I had to point out the biggest flaws in this game, like I said, it's just the general sense of being lost, like you said. A lot of times I would wait. If I was near death, I'd go ahead and kill myself on purpose just so I could get a view of that big map.
Yeah.
And see where I was. But this was a game I was able to clear 3 levels on without dying.
Yeah, that's about how far I made it. You know, you can get a map on the function keys, but there's 2 different types of maps basically. And so one of them's less helpful than the other. This game, in a lot of ways, some of me just wishes you didn't fly at all, like I mentioned, and that you just drove around, because that I had more fun just doing that, like exploration type stuff.
Yeah,
I could see why they put that in, because that maybe added that extra dimension. But I kind of like this. They do a lot with the graphics. The explosions and stuff are neat. I mean, we've played games that were this sort of game. But I don't think we've played one that's this advanced. Like, they tried to do a lot in this. And I think they sort of pulled it off. You're right. If you could get this like a CD32. And I think I read somewhere that someone had done some sort of AGA patch to this. I don't know what it would have entailed. I didn't try it.
Some gradients, probably.
Well, it probably stuff to maybe to increase the speed or something like that. Or maybe even add more button stuff. Maybe it's something to look into. Having the power-ups is nice. I wish I'd been better at the game, so I could have gotten some of the later levels to see. Because I watched the playthrough, and it looked awesome. Mm-hmm. The later levels, I mean, some of these things get huge.
I mean, even at the early levels, there is a goodly amount of variety in the enemies. And that's one of the cool things about, you know, polygonal things, is you can go to town, even if you're not the world's greatest artist, and come up with some really cool shapes, you know?
Yeah, I wish... When the planes and stuff, the ships that fly in, they look cool. They fly in formation sometimes, which is neat. I mean, it does take some getting used to, you know, and I don't like I said, the draw distance. I do have a problem with that. I like to, of course, I mean, what are you going to do? Again, I think this is a game that was ahead of its time. It's funny that, as I mentioned, this thing came over from the ST. And when you look at these side by side, I mean, they are virtually identical.
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, we always talk about, you know, what were the games that really made the Amiga shine? And it's games that are just like this, because, you know, in 1990, there was no console on the market that could give you an experience like this. There just wasn't. There was nothing that could push pixels like this. Now, there are some people in the chat saying that the video that we're watching now may be emulated because of the smoothness.
Yeah.
But even if it wasn't the smoothest thing in the world, it still is leaps and bounds ahead of anything that was available in the home market. And the fact that, you know, it was just so... It's unique, and its uniqueness, I think, is what made me enjoy it.
I played this on the 1200, so I can't sit here and tell you. I also played it on Amiga Forever, so I could fool with the buttons. But I don't see a whole lot of difference. I mean, I guess maybe it's running a little bit faster, but I didn't when I played it. I didn't think to myself, this is too slow. I thought, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. This seems fine. I was actually sort of impressed that it looked as quick as it did. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the ST version of this, I guess this was pretty well received on the ST. I should mention, I just thought this was interesting. I told you they released at the same time. They also released at the same price, according to the ad, £24.99, which is what this was going for. And this was so well received on the Atari that it actually they won the Atari ST format number 6 best shoot 'em up game in 1990. So number six on that list, I guess that's good. Number six is better than number 10. I don't know how many, we have to look and see how many games came out that year, but still it made a list. So there's something to it. But I don't see a whole lot of difference between the two in terms of the way they look. You would think the Atari ST would run this better than the Amiga, because this is supposedly, this is a game that it's, these sorts of games are supposed to be better on the ST because of the clock speed. But, you know, maybe one of these days we'll end up pulling this on the ST show boat. We could give it a whirl. I looked this up for review purposes to see how it did on Lemon Boat before we get to our Discords. Lemon gave this a 7.71. I think that's fair. Amiga Action and Amiga Computing gave it a 78 and 79 respectively. Amiga Format gave it an 80. Amiga Joker with an 80. So hey, not too bad.
They liked it.
The average CUME gave it a 90. The average magazine rating 81. I'd say that's not the worst. I mean, I think they're in there. The magazine's pretty much universal. No one gave it below a 70 or above a 90. And I think you're locked in there. I'd say somewhere in the upper 70s or low 80s. I'd say this is where I would put this. Did we get any Discord action on this thing, Bo?
We did. We got our first review comes from Alien Breeder.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, for one of the first times, I had never even heard of this game, so I went in as a clean slate, not even knowing what type of game it was. Welcome to our world, Alien Breeder. I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised by how much fun I had. Controls were a bit difficult at first, and still a bit difficult after some time. But it was enjoyable, played at a good frame rate, and was fairly unique. Overall, I give this 842 top bananas out of 100.
Oh, man. That's a lot of top bananas, Boat.
It is. Lobsterminator writes, a rare and enjoyable Amiga game, what? In the sense that...
Lobby wrote that?
Burying what the Amiga. Heck? And that I actually made decent progress. So often with old games, it's a wonder if I even beat the first level. In Simulcra, I made it to level 5 until I had to stop playing. Sadly, there didn't seem to be any save function or level code to continue later. I am interested in whether the difficulty ramps up. Controls are very sensitive, but after a while, you learn to use the joystick in short bursts. Flying was extra difficult, so I avoided it as much as I can, and it was also very easy to accidentally fire a missile when shooting lasers. Yet another game where an extra button would have improved the controls immensely. The 3D graphics are bare but functional, and the frame rate is playable even on an A500. I had fun playing this, and this is a game I plan on revisiting 8 out of 10.
It's a pretty good score after that burial.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for our Discord reviews this week.
You know, he mentioned something there, the way he played this with short bursts. That's exactly the way to play this. You have to, especially with the draw distance. You can't just go in there like a maniac and drive as fast as you can. You've got to literally take it one little bit of a time. But if you do that, you could go through this game and without a ton of difficulty. You know, and I'm assuming that's why they put the time limit in there. The time limit, by the way, never came into play with me. But you know, on these bigger matrices, I could see where you'd have a problem. But overall, you know, listen, it's funny. The Amiga's got this rep of not doing this sort of game well, you know. And we have found several of these games that we've enjoyed, including one that won Game of the Year that was sort of like this for us. So I'm starting to turn the corner on the Amiga not doing these sort of games very well. I think this is listen, with all the faults I found in it, it's a unique, fun game that I would go back to and try to get better at, Boat.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's all we got on that one.
Let's leave Simulcra so I don't have to say the name anymore and move on to our community updates section.
Well, just a couple offerings this week, Boatster. I'll let you talk on this. As we mentioned earlier, it's Septandy. And you know what that means, Boat? It means we're getting our Septandy on. And we did a little Septandy review. It was Shock Trooper. Tell us about it.
You know, Shock Trooper is an interesting game. I think it's the most Apple II looking game we've covered on the Tandy. It just really throws out these apps. When I think about, like, what is your typical Apple II looking game, I always think about something that would look like this.
Yeah.
This is a side-scrolling game with a sci-fi bent where you are traveling through this compound, freeing your compatriots, defeating monsters, and basically destroying electrical equipment. And
it sounds
so,
like you.
Yeah, that's it's my life right there in a capsule. So this is a game that has some a lot of it's this is another one of these games that sort of has that impossible mission vibe, I think, where it's got some elevators and you're kind of sauntering around.
But it's nothing really
I like
this
that. Game. This is one of these graphics modes where you can get really, really detailed sprites. I know that the Coco doesn't have sprites, but I'm using that word generically.
Yeah.
I thought that the monsters were designed well. I thought your guy looked cool. I dug this one.
Yeah, listen, this is one of the best games we've played on here and I've never heard of it until I mean maybe I'd heard of it, but I never played it. This was top notch. Top notch.
Yeah, and Curtis mentions the haunting Shock Trooper love theme at the beginning is great.
It still haunts me, you know. I can never be in love again without hearing it. So but this is one if you haven't tried it, dust off the old Coco and fire this sucker up because I was really surprised with this one. I mean, more surprised I hadn't heard of it. But I mean it was the gameplay was there, it was original. There's a lot of variety in it. Just a win. A win on the Coco. So please check this out when you get a chance, Boat or everyone else. Boat's seen it. Let's talk. We're going to briefly talk about this. You know, me and the Brent had a heck of a time this week finding the time in Brent's incredible work schedule to do a show. And when we did do a show, we had internet problems. We had microphone trouble. With that sort of billing, how could you not watch our Neo Geo battle where we play Prehistoric Isle 2 and the Super Spy, which released this week. Now, it's definitely a watchable show, and I urge you to watch it. I'll tell you why. Prehistoric Isle, we did a thing this week where Brent picked a game that was in like the first iteration of Neo Geo titles, and I picked a game that was near the end that wasn't King of Fighters. So that meant this is one of the last games released that wasn't King of Fighters, Prehistoric Island 2. And having not played Prehistoric Island 1, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And ultimately, I found this sort of a bland, forgettable title. It didn't age well. But I got to give the Brent credit again. I hate doing this. He found this game I've never played on the Neo Geo from early in its existence called The Super Spy, where it's a first-person exploration and role-playing game.
This thing is super nutty. I had never in a million years heard of this game before.
Now, have you tried it since you've heard of it?
I have not.
You should give it a whirl. You'll have to watch the show to fully comprehend what it is. And listen, it's a game that could have been fleshed out to the nines. This could have been done on any computer, by the way. And this is probably the way you want to do it. But it's a very unusual game. And I want to say Brent won the day with this one. So if you get a chance this week, check it out. That's our episode 232, the Neo Geo Battle, Prehistoric Isle 2, and the Super Spy. That was a fun game. Let's look over on what we did on the stream team. We only had one stream team release this week. And this was this is something I found in our double super secret archives. So this is the thing that the stream team channel is made for. Stuff that we streamed that we never released, or stuff that we streamed that we forgot we had and never released. This is a stream that me and I think we were testing out the arcade stream, which is funny because I've been working on that again. But and so this is myself, the Brent, and my son, and we're in the arcade playing arcade games. There's a hilarious moment in this where Brent kills me in Mortal Kombat, and Luke is traumatized big time, and runs away and wedges himself in between two pinball machines. Here it is right now. If you're watching at home, watch Luke right here. He watches what happens. He looks at horror, and there he goes. He's out of here. And as he runs off, he's going, nope, 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 nope. So, and then me and Luke play some games too. So this was a lot of fun. This was Luke's birthday week this week. So I got a good nostalgia shot. From going
I
back
tell you,
and
man, watching
this
stream, we got to do it. We got to do our own arcade stream over in the arcade when you get it all set up.
Absolutely, man. And I've putting this rig back out there. This was a lot of fun, though. And like I said, this was something we never ever released anywhere. So this is the first time it's been seen. So it's called Classic Arcade Streaming with the Brent, Amigo, Aaron, and Luke. And it's on our Amigo Stream Team channel. We would sure be appreciative if you would add that. One more thing I want to add, Boat, real quick. We haven't released it yet, but coming out, I believe, this week, Boat, will be a stream me and Boat did just a week ago today. And what a stream that was, Boat, where we attempted to play games on the Tandy TRSA Car Computer 3 with the had an unboxing of the multi-pack, multi-cartridge system plus the speech additional pack, and we rammed it all together, and after some technical difficulty, we actually got to play Tandy games with speech, and we had a lot of fun after the horrible parts. And luckily, I edited out all the sitting around parts, but then I added them in later if you want to watch Boat kill time while I'm desperately looking for an 1/8-inch jack cable. That's at the end of the video. But we had a lot of fun with that boat, and we're going to be releasing that, I think, this week, since this is the last week of September, in honor of Septandy. So that's something to look out for. That'll be on our main Amigos channel. That's all I got, Boat.
All right, Aaron. It's time for last week's winners of the Patreon Song Challenge. So, want to give a big shout out to the top three guys that got it, because there were only three. Happy Coding, ZX, Pac-Billy, and Mitsuyama all guessed Don't Stop Till You Get Enough by Michael Jackson. Of course, I added a couple dance moves that were a little bit too advanced for MJ.
I'm surprised
the Tyrannosaurus hands were the best.
I'm surprised no one got that one, Boat. Of course, it was wretched. That could be part of it.
Well, three people got it. You saying Happy Coding's nobody?
Well, no. I'm saying I thought there'd be a girth, a wide. I mean, I didn't think that was that particularly difficult. So maybe I've just got a good ear for the Michael Jackson.
All right. We have a new Patreon song this week. This is a full band deal. We hope you enjoyed it. If you know the answer, send me an email at john@amigospodcast.com, and I will announce you as a winner on next week's episode. Yeah. Sorry. Happy Coding in his email said, please stop. I've had enough.
Yeah, so you've... That's good stuff, Boat. You ready to go?
And if you're watching in the chat, please don't put it in the chat. Keep it fun for everyone. Send me an email, john@amigospodcast.com. Hit it.
R-Typer, Bumpface, who has Chris Edwards' pencil along? What we like, Mr. Chip, Peter, Price, Herman B. Wander Lee, Ches, and Mark Richardson, David Hurram, OK, Rom, OK, David Terrace, Jude Carlos, Matthew Mobius, The Phantom Magnus, Seth Yates, Alistair B., David Z., George Rosansky, The Amiga Show, Dinner Crabtree, Super, Femi King, Crazy Loomis, William Vincent Scar, Heavy Systems, Inc., Bundy, Frag Lord, Mark Byland, Olaf Hope, Alien Breeder, David Lawson, Raptor, Cowboy Boy, Danny Williams, Luke Hudson, Bomb the Bass, Frodo, and L. Solitizer, Tech Major, and Mr. Cola, Bernard Lucas, Jared Dennington, Zorg Love, Reflection, Simon Ledge, Captain Crispy, Killer Bites and Kathy, Gary Heather, Three Loves, Kate Fox, David Pickford, Cameron Armstrong, Andy Jones, Love Terminator, Tim and Amigo, Red Fruit Pass, Bernard Quinn, Ramsey, Tim Drew, Joseph Harrison, Kyle Leder, Rob O'Hara, Matthew Merritt, Brandy Craig, Chancellor, Barkley, Roland Burke, Andrew Munz, Joe the Zombie, the Kellon, Alan Kabbalah, Chakotay, Neville Lord, John Marshall, Matthew Carroll, Ricky DeRosier, Hippie Deadpool, Figgy CTZ, The Slow Voice, Stefan Sogard, Mortensen, Evan Helen, Christopher Hassel, Chris Holt, Lauren Giroux, Graham Betty, Adam Battersby, O'Brien's Retro, and Vintage Gary Hucker, Paul Harrington, Duncan Styles, Tales from the Crypt, Josh Nan and the Bradleys. Jonas Rulo, THC, Eric Nelson. Daniel Benson, Darren Cole. Jason Horn, Pixels at Dawn. Your Barman, Amigos Patreon song. Don't forget, Bone Fest coming up in 2 weeks. And I knew you'll all be there for that. I hope.
What was that last line about Bone Fest?
Yeah, yeah. So it's possible some of those parts might have been recorded slightly before some of the other ones.
Boat Fest is not in 2 weeks. I want to make that abundantly clear. I am not ready for that. Good Lord.
All right. And of course, Aaron, we can't let an episode go by without thanking our fine, fine Twitch subscribers. These are the people that tune in every week at Fridays around 5 o'clock-ish to watch us perform the show live. We got TSI Matt, Mitsuyama, Pints and Amiga, Retro Jerry, Negsol, Oil of Hope, Doc Rabs, MTG, Explorer, Dave7G1000, Dub Project, Mash Pie, Buck Owens, RetroRewind.ca, Super Tech Boy, Luminate08, Tenmark, Twilight Zoner, HSEI Ken, Mr. Rocket, Steve Burtz, Edvin Helland, Uber Scuba Diver, Tinfoil, Eeyore, 4077, Real Retro Dude, Beach Bum 7, Hayward Heel, Spinny 108, Holy Guacamole, Jabba Soft, Robin Wendell, Pakotake, Amiga Live, Christian Russell, Texas Foosballer, Brother Bill, Happy Coding ZX, Goldilocks UK, Rob O'Hara, and that's it.
Very good, Boats. That's an all-star cast of people. We thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, yes. All right, Aaron, pull the curtain, man. What are we playing next week?
Here we go. And the winner is The Adventures of Chuck Norris, Boat. It's just Norris. It's The Adventures of Slow Norris. No, it's just Norris. Actually,
ironically, I believe the Slow Norris was the Amigos Game Selection Committee member that added this to the list.
Yes, I believe this was a crooked vote. He voted for his own game, I think. This is so we know this is based on his life. Should be a lot of fun. Yeah. I should mention that this game, I believe, did not actually have a physical release, Boat. But we will delve into that more next week. I've never played this or heard of it, so it's going to be one of those, Boat.
One of those. All right. Well, it sounds good, man. We will see y'all next time. Thank you so much for listening. And until next week,
adios.